to another exciting episode of Data Science with Sam. Today's podcast episode is Data Decoded, Navigating the AI Revolution. I'm your host, Sam, and today we have an esteemed guest who is at the forefront of data analytics and artificial intelligence. Before we dive in, I want to quickly remind our listeners that the perspectives shared today are solely those of our guest and host, and do not represent any organization views. We are thrilled to have Vishal, a renowned expert in data analytics and AI entrepreneurship. Vishal, welcome to the show.
Sam, glad to be here. Happy to be here.
Let's start by taking a step back. Could you share a bit about your professional journey and how you found yourself at the intersection of data analytics and AI?
Absolutely, sure. So Sam, I have like more than 20 years of experience at this point in data science, analytics, machine learning. And I've been working with like a bunch of B2C and B2B companies in technology space, SaaS, healthcare, IT. And throughout my career, I've focused on BI or business intelligence, machine learning, AI. And the one thing that's helped me to create that intersection of technology and business is having that hands-on as well as like the leadership experience in data science. And then on the top of that, that ability to work across different kinds of departments like sales, marketing, product, finance, understanding their different pain points. So that's really helped me. And over the years, I've been like lucky enough to work with big tech names like IBMs to small startups. And from educational perspective, I have an like MBA in marketing. So really intrigued and also interested in using a lot of the skill set from sales, marketing, and product analytics perspective. Over the years, I've also focused on like the three main pillars, I would say, when it comes to the skill set. Data engineering, data science, data visualization. And by combining these three areas, my goal has always been to provide that solid direction, both strategically as well as tactically, for the data science function or for the AI function to drive some kind of successful achievement of revenue outcomes, I would say. And on the top of that, I've managed like small to large data teams. My teams have produced insights that reduce the customer churn by 10%, improve the conversion rates for marketing teams by almost 20%, so on and so forth. And lastly, in terms of technical piece, I am familiar with SQL, Python, Tableau, Power BI, Snowflake, Azure, AWS. So a lot of those really good technologies that helps you to scale your machine learning and AI initiatives. So to sum it up, Sam, you know, like I help companies by building their data science strategy, data vision, and I focus on those three key areas that I mentioned, data engineering, data science, data visualization, and the topic of like today's conversation, AI and machine learning.
Thank you, Vishal.
So that's me.
It sounds like a really fascinating journey of your professional career where you kind of like delve deep into, I mean, every areas or aspects of data science and data analytics, because in today's world, I mean, I just feel like we can't live without, you know, like, you know, indulging to this expertise, data expertise area. So thank you for sharing your journey, professional journey. I'm pretty sure my listeners and audience are interested to know more about what your perspectives are in terms of data analytics AI in the later part of this episode. So now let's dive into the main interesting topics for today's discussion. First of all, I'm curious about your perspective on large language models like GPT. As we all know that these LLMs have been a phenomenal, like in the last couple of years, people started using it for personal purpose as well as, you know, for their day-to-day job. So I wanted to kind of like understand that, what do you think about the impact of LLMs in data analysis and interpretation?
Sure, I think, you know, it's definitely a new world for all of us, you know, with the advancement in AI. I think the large language models like GPTs, they've completely changed how we work with data. When you really speak it or look at it from someone who is in this data analytics or data science field, I mean, I'll give you an example. Before, you know, analyzing the data was time consuming. It required a lot of technical know-how. You remember the days when you had to write the codes and then building the reports, digging through the dashboards? I'm sure like a lot of companies still do that. But now we have tools like ChatGPT, and you can just ask. You know, ask is the keyword here for what you need in like real simple English. And that really changes the game. And those tools keep advancing more and more. Now we have the ability to talk to GPT. They're also bringing in some video features to that. So like if you are a marketing manager, now you could ask ChatGPT, like, what was our sales last quarter? What products sold? What were the best selling products last month? So on and so forth. So instead of like waiting for days and days for an analyst to give you an answer, they can just get that instant answer if you have some of those pieces set up correctly. So I think tools like GPT has made data more accessible to everyone, and not just only like to the data scientists. And that's really powerful in my mind, because it helps the teams to make the faster decisions, better decisions. And I think lastly, it also helps you to explore the data better. If you are an analyst, if you are within the data community, let's say like if you're a retail company, GPT can tell you like sales for like your winter coats, it went up by 15% in certain states of the country. And that's really useful trend that you can see without digging too much into the data, without writing some complex piece of code. So that's really good. The one caveat that I would say here is like GPT is like kind of, it isn't perfect. And it all depends on the quality of data that you train it on. So if the input data that you have as an organization, as a company is messy, the results are not going to be reliable. Garbage in, garbage out kind of principle for a lot of data analytics and data science related initiatives. So yeah, it's great at generating the insight. I think it's humans who can really provide still like the business context and the judgment. So I think GPT as a teammate can speed up your work, but it is definitely not a complete replacement of humans or the analysts. So yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
No, that's a really a compelling overview of that, Vishal. And I totally agree with you. Like GPT and these LLMs, they might empower a marketing manager to do some sort of a technical stuff without relying on a data analyst. However, we can't just, you know, blindly rely on the data that or the output that we're getting from GPT. Correct. We still need a data analyst to kind of like decipher that and make a meaningful kind of like insights out of it. So I would say that, yeah, it's kind of like make our life a little easier in terms of taking away those extra burden of mundane data analytics tasks, but we still need those analysts who can help out the marketing manager or business leads to derive business insights. So it's more about like augmenting human intelligence with AI that's going to make our life easier and make the process faster. And I believe that's 100%. How some of this thing. Yeah, so thanks, Vishal, for your overview and perspective. So building on top of that, how do you see businesses effectively integrating AI technologies into their existing data strategies? You probably touched a little bit upon that by providing the example of marketing manager in your previous answer, but I just wanted to know more about it out here. What do you think about how business can integrate AI into their current business objectives?
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good question. I can expand upon that one. Sam, I think to make the whole AI model work for any businesses, I think you need to start with a clear plan, just as like you need a good plan to implement any of the larger data science or data analytics initiatives. AI isn't magic. You know, it works based when you know what problem that you're trying to solve. It needs some kind of perspective, the direction that you are heading towards. And let's say like you are, as an example, you are a subscription business and you're struggling with customer churn. If that's a problem that you're trying to solve, AI can help you to predict which customers are likely to leave you so that you can win them back. But you really have to be able to define that goal, and having that kind of specific high impact goal can help you to be better on your AI journey, and also prove the value of your like AI initiatives to the business at the end of the day, you know. But once you have that plan, the next step would be like preparing the data, getting the data. And as I said before, AI is only as good as the data that it's trained on. The AI just doesn't show up by itself. You need the data. You need the data at the bottom of it, and companies really need to clean up their data, organize it, make sure it's accurate. So I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that AI is good, but behind the door, you need this mindset of data first strategy. You got to figure out your data first, and then you can go towards the AI revolution. You know, if the data is incomplete, the predictions, the machine learning models that you build, it's not going to work. And once the data is ready, I would say start small. You know, most of the organizations want to take on like some large scale, really big initiatives, but starting small has its own advantages. So maybe run a small pilot project, test AI on like one process, measure the results before like you start scaling up. You know, like for example, if you are a retailer, you can use AI to predict demand for certain products. And if that works, now you can expand it to the entire supply chain. And lastly, I would say train your teams, you know, and this is where the people side of the technology comes in. AI doesn't replace people, as I mentioned earlier. It works with people. And teaching employees, teaching your own people how to use AI, it really makes them feel that they are a part of the solution. So yeah, those are some of the things that you can do to manage and integrate AI technologies better into some of your data strategies.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on that, Vishal. And thank you for sharing your perspective on this question. Like, you know, you mentioned that, you know, like data is still the essential oil. I mean, without having a quality data, we cannot transform it into a meaningful business insights. Whether we are using Gen AI or a simple linear regression model, it won't work if the underlying data is falsified. It will always like provide some errors that most of our data scientists kind of like know about that from validation standpoint. My next question is kind of related to the first question, where I kind of like asked you that how Gen AI is making an impact in the data analysis field. So I'm going to take it a little farther, and I'm going to ask you that, okay, so we know that there are some certain ways Gen AI can help us with data analysis. Now, if we would like to do a machine learning or predictive analytics, so do you see any sort of like an emerging trends in the Gen AI world that's going to simplify that ML and predictive analytics field of study in future, where we don't have to build a model from the scratch, rather we will have some Gen AI toolkits that's going to do this for us? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
So you're trying to ask like how I see like some of these trends, how they're going to impact machine learning and predictive analytics in the Gen AI era?
Yes, similar to what you talked about data analysis, like how would that impact would translate into machine learning and predictive
analytics? I think, you know, Gen AI is definitely going to go deeper into both of those areas, machine learning as well as the predictive analytics. I believe like, you know, there will be more real-time decisions, you know, so AI models that we have, now they're like fast enough to analyze the data on fly. You know, like we already have like the apps like Uber. They change the prices instantly based on traffic, demand, weather, so many different variables. And it's as this models become more sophisticated, I think the level of speed is going to just increase, and it's going to spread to the other industries like retail, finance, logistics. So that will be one thing, real-time decisions. I also think like the experiences that a lot of the consumer companies can deliver to their customers, they will become more and more personalized. So AI is going to help, I think businesses tailor experiences to more individual customers. We can already see that, right? Like when you start your Netflix or when you're listening to Spotify, all of these companies have really started using machine learning to its like the optimal level. And they use it to recommend different kinds of shows or the songs that you love. So those are the kind of real good cases where things will become more personalized because of the AI. And in fact, I was reading like some report the other day. So businesses that use AI for personalizations, they grow their revenue 40% faster than the ones that did the ones that don't. You know, so there's definitely revenue impact as well. Another one is, I think, the ability of AI to explain certain outputs. That's really cool nowadays. So, you know, AI makes those important decisions. It suggests the different kinds of outcomes that you can take. But businesses want to know why. And so I'll give you an example. For example, a bank can use AI to approve different loans, but they need to explain it, how the model reached to its decision. And that's where, like, there's this whole new area of explainable AI is coming in, where they not only tell you what's happening, but why it's happening and what to do about that, you know. And the last piece is, I think some of these pre-trained models that we are seeing, like some of the agents that are coming in, they are trained on this huge data sets, but also very specific to a certain industry. And that will help different industries to stay more focused and use the AI within the area of their individual domain. For example, like a hospital can train a model to analyze certain patient records and then predict the risk much faster than before. So those are like some of the very individualized cases of AI that we will see in the future, you know. So yeah, Sam, I think those are some of the main pieces. The decisions will become more real time. The experience will become more and more personalized, I think. We'll get into more of explainable side of the AI in the future. And I think the agents, they will become more and more popular as well.
Yeah, thank you, Vishal, because I do agree with you about the explainable AI topic, because I believe that, you know, when the deep learning and the neural network thing came into picture, and I think the godfather of AI, Geoffrey Hinton, also like mentioned the same, that it was more of like a black box to the common technology evangelist at that time, because we just don't know that how the, you know, the hidden layer concept really work. It was kind of more of like a black box to us. But having this explainable AI approach surfacing around nowadays is going to give us more visibility to the what's going on inside an LLM model. And that's going to help us to kind of like, you know, do more innovation or probably build more on top of this LLM, especially probably address some of the ethical consideration concerns that, you know, raised by some of the regulation and boards, you know, like across the world. So yeah, I definitely agree with you on that explainable AI matter that you just mentioned. So now that moving on to my next question, and this is something related to job market, which is always like a hot topic, you know. Mm-hmm.
So because,
we are doing a lot of stuff, you know, in technology. Obviously, that's going to open up a new paradigm of like a new jobs and new trends are coming up. Like we already seen that the prompt engineering, which I still don't believe is a kind of like a subset of an engineering, because I just don't feel like the engineering skills are required for prompt engineering. But people started making argument that, you know, software engineering going to get replaced by prompt engineering in future. So just to kind of like, you know, piggyback on that, and I just wanted to understand that, what do you think about how this current AI technology is going to impact job market, especially the skill requirements in data analytics and data science area in next 5 to 10 years? Again, we don't have a crystal ball here, but again, I just want to get your perspective on that.
Understood. Yeah. And I truly wish I had one as well. But I know that's a very, very important topic for a lot of us, those who work in technology, those who don't work in technology as well, right? Like, how is this really going to impact the job market and like the future generation? But I really think that it's going to change the kinds of jobs we do. AI is going to automate some basic tasks like data cleaning or querying like some of the simple reports. There has always been some kind of need to automate some of those tasks. But I think it's also creating, to your point, Sam, you know, it's creating this new opportunities. And that's the key word. I think the new opportunities for people who can work with these tools. Understand, like, maybe a software engineer may or may not need the prompt engineering. But like, let's say if you are in the data field, if you're a data scientist, learning some of those skills like prompt engineering, knowing how to talk to models like GPT will go a long way, you know. And a lot of the data scientists, I believe, they'll need to focus more on solving the business problems instead of just writing the code, because some of that code writing is going to be done by the AI fairly quickly. It's going to take care of like that heavy lifting, so the analyst can focus more on the strategical part of the business side of it. So Yeah, soft skills are going to be more important than ever. Businesses will need people who can explain the AI results in simpler terms, because we all of us know, like, the underlying structure or the way these models are built, they are like not so easily explainable. There's a lot of math, there's a lot of statistics that goes behind this model. So the ability to explain the results of some of these AI initiatives will become like really more and more important. And that's where like the communication skills will kick in, you know? So yeah, that's how the job market is going to change. And people will need to learn both the technical as well as the non-technical skills to survive in the era of AI.
Love that, especially the keywords here, new opportunities. I mean, human minds, we always strive for, you know, achieving something bigger than what you have done before, right? So you always find a way to do something, right? We've seen that in the past when that computer, you know, evolution started back in 70s and 80s, when mathematicians used to go on a parade to protest against computers going to take over their job, right? But that didn't happen, right? Maybe some of the mathematicians became a computer scientist, right? So I just feel like the human minds will always try to find something, you know, that's what we are. That's why we are the most like advanced species on Earth. So yeah, I love your response on that. Moving on to the next thing is that now we kind of talked about a lot of like fascinating stuff about Gen AI, machine learning and the stuff, right? But so many time, you know, like we also need to make sure that every time we use a new toolkit, you know, we are kind of like, you know, putting some data there, and you know, like we are using a toolkit to kind of like synthesize the data, trying to get a better insights out of it. So in today's industry world, data privacy is very crucial, right? So what do you see as the most significant challenges in maintaining data privacy with those advanced AI systems, especially in the Gen AI era, since we have a plethora of Gen AI toolkits that we can shop for, right? So how do we kind of like maintain the balance between data privacy and also kind of inciting that innovation so that to make sure that, you know, like we are not kind of breaking the barrier, as well as we are not kind of like putting our data in danger?
No, you're absolutely right about that. When you know all of these AI models, they need like this lot of data to learn. And sometimes that data includes private or like some kind of confidential information, you know. So for example, let's say if you're a healthcare company and you want to use AI for patient diagnostics, you must be careful, like you're not including some of the private data into it when you're building the model or when you're training the model. So that would be a kind of new challenge, new thing to take care of while data scientists are building the model. Another problem, I think, is the compliance and the complexity of the roles like GDPR, CCPA, and they will have to evolve with the changing landscape of AI, because there will be more and more models. There will be like much, so not only the LLMs, but also the smaller language models. Different companies, different organizations will come up with their own products specific to different industries. So it's going to create that complex scenario for businesses as well as the regulations, and they will have to meet somewhere in the middle that really helps to protect the privacy of the data of individuals, you know. So it really makes that tricky scenario to ensure compliance. And also on the top of that, Sam, I think bias is also going to be another challenge, you know. So like, let's say you build the AI model that is created from some kind of biased data, it's going to make like the unfair decisions. So kind of like give an example, AI tool, you build an AI tool, but it's trained on like biased resumes, and it will unfavorably favor one group over another, you know. So those kind of models will also create challenges, not only in terms of privacy, but also creating more biased models. So to solve this kind of issues, I think companies will have to be more mindful about the privacy, the data that they use, and they will have to come up with regular audits, encryption of the data, as well as some kind of human oversight before some of these things can be automated and regulations kick in quite well, you know. So yeah, those are some of the thoughts that I have there.
No, definitely I couldn't agree more with you on this, because responsible AI, another term kind of like started surfacing in last 1 year or so, as I've seen that, you know, the big companies started hiring AI paralegal associates who kind of like, you know, mainly help the organization to make sure that the input data are not biased, you know, like, you know, it's not biased to certain demographics. I believe a year back when the Google Gemini model first came out, there was some sort of a backlash about, you know, some of the pictures are kind of like very much skewed to a certain race or communities. And I feel like, you know, at that time, Google had to basically like take down the model, and then they have to basically come up with the model in the later versions to kind of like avoid that, you know, model bias scenarios. So yeah, I mean, the responsible AI, I mean, as we keep like, you know, progressing further and further in this Gen AI journey, we also need to make sure that we are not, you know, like, you know, stepping and we're not kind of avoiding the responsible AI thing, because at the end, data privacy and compliance is the main thing. I myself work in a finance and insurance area for almost an entire part of my professional life, and I do believe that data privacy is very crucial, that because at the end, we are dealing with people's medical records or health records or any personal PII data, and we need to be mindful about fitting those data into any AI toolkits without knowing what's going on inside that, you know, black box, right? So obviously data privacy is a concern, and I hope the companies will be mindful and they will be putting some sort of a, like guardrails to make sure the data privacy is their main concern even before they get, you know, go down that Gen AI journey in future. So thank you for your perspective, Vishal, and I totally, it resonates with my thought process as well. Moving on to the next question, I would like to kind of like know a little bit about that. I know you've been a kind of a person who also has some hands-on experience in some real-world application specific to Gen AI. So I just wanted to see if you have any fascinating like example of AI solving complex data-driven problems that you're currently working on, or something that you have worked on in the past, or you provided solution to any enterprise level companies. So if you can, you know, share some example of Gen AI toolkits, that'll be great.
Sure. So I'll give an example of a B2B company, a SaaS company that I recently worked with. Mm-hmm. And what we did is like we used AI as well as like a combination of machine learning to help them predict who's going to churn in the future, you know? So that's what we are trying to do. And I was working with the customer success as well as the marketing team. And this company had a lot of customers churning. And especially if you are in the software industry, it's a known fact that it's easier to retain your customers than to keep acquiring new ones. Of course, you want to acquire new customers, but it's definitely, it's always like an uphill battle. So you have to stop the bleeding if you have a lot of customers churning. So what I was brought in to do was to definitely use the internal talent that the company had, like their data scientists, data engineers, and build a model that will predict who is going to churn. So what we did is that we started like collecting a lot of different data points about their previous customers. For example, how long that they have been using the software for, how frequently are they logging into the software? Are they using certain features of the software? So on and so forth. I mean, there were just ton of data points that we gathered. And then we started using some of the statistical techniques like logistic regression. I wouldn't go like too much into the details, but it produces this, it gave this value of 0 to 1. And one would tell someone that, hey, this customer is likely to churn, and 0 would say something otherwise. And we didn't stop there in this particular case. Once the entire process was automated, and that's where we use like some of the tools and technologies in data engineering, data science, but the entire model building creation piece was automated at some point. And then we started pushing this data into Salesforce. So now if you can imagine, like, let's say if you are the account executive for McDonald's, and you open up the account in your Salesforce, you can see that this customer is likely to churn. And not only that much, we also pushed like some of the explainable AI piece that we were talking about previously, that this customer is likely to churn, but also because they haven't used our software or our product in last 30 days, 60 days, or they haven't done X amount of activities. So the whole idea is, not only to produce the result, but also to empower your sales and marketing teams to act on that why. So when they are talking with the end customer next time, the conversation becomes much more meaningful. They can address the like the real problems that the customer is encountering and possibly reduce the churn. And because of this project or because of this analysis, we were able to reduce the churn by 10%. It was a $200 million organization. So you can imagine that was like easily like 0.5% of profit added just because of this AI or machine learning initiative. So that's one example, Sam, that I would share, like where you can use this new predictive modeling and the predictive techniques of AI.
Fascinating. That's great to know. One quick follow-up question, building that model and developing it or even deploying it in the production, as you kind of mentioned, a little bit of technicalities of how you kind of like apply the logistic regression model and what was the baseline in terms of predicting the customer churn. Have you ever encountered any sort of like issue with any model overfitting or underfitting? And there is a scenario where you had lack of data, so you basically have to perform like a different kind of like a validation mechanism to encounter those model limitation scenarios?
That's a really good question. And yes, we did encounter that one. But I mean, throughout the process, again, without going much technical on your listeners, but we had used something called a stepwise regression method. So what it does is that it will basically keep building the model again and again and again. And it will start with everything that you give. Then it will keep certain piece of useful information, the pieces or the data points that helps you to predict the outcome. For example, in this case, churn. It will build the model once. Then it will just kind of figure out the accuracy and the significance of all of those data points that you have given to the model. It will rebuild it. And then it will continue to keep doing those iterations until it runs out of all the possible ways of building any additional model. And that will become the final set of data points that it will say that, hey, these are the right kind of data points or the variables that predicts someone's churning in the future, you know. So that's one way of managing the bias or the, managing the bias. And also you can use some of the other methods like precision, recall. Those are some of the areas, some of the metrics that you can use to understand like the strength of the model. So that's what we had done in this particular case.
Thank you. And I'm pretty sure we do have some core data scientist listeners out there, and I'm pretty sure all these words mean meaningful to them, because as I believe they also kind of like deal with similar kind of validation.
Yes.
It comes to logistic regression all the time. Precision, recall, confusion matrix, always been a confusing thing for me, but this is something we always have to rely on when it comes to model validation. And I believe even with the Gen AI, that's not going to go away. So some of the fundamental of statistics that will always be there when it comes to model development and validation. So thanks, Vishal, yes, for giving a kind of a holistic overview of this case study or the work I've done for a B2B SaaS company. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Moving on to the last question of this episode, what skills should aspiring data scientists focus on to remain competitive in an AI-driven industry landscape for next 5 years? Again, we don't have a crystal ball, so I just want your honest opinion on this one.
No, definitely. Sure. And you know what? I'll be open about that. Even like being in that field and having this years of experience and having seen the field like changing very rapidly, that is something I think all of us are challenged with in today's new day and age. And even I personally struggle in terms of like learning this continuous new concepts that come up. But you know what, Sam, I realized that at some point you have to like pick something. And what I have seen, like some of like the new data scientists or the folks who are like entering this area of data and AI, sometimes they get hung up on like one perfect course or one perfect material or something that will really tell them like what exactly to do. And my suggestion would be to start somewhere, pick one course and stick with that. Go through that one, and there is no exact roadmap to learning some of these new tools and technologies. Everybody's roadmap is slightly different. But as long as you are learning some of the core skills related to statistics, related to math, as long as you're good at some of the tool, like the programming languages like SQL, Python, and then as you get into more about like the machine learning, having a basic idea about like how the GPT models are built, LLMs are built, knowing like basic pieces about TensorFlow, Hugging Face, those are some of the things that you should know. And lastly, I would emphasize, and this is something that's been becoming more and more important recently, which is the data engineering piece. I kind of touched upon it earlier that it's all about data, the underlying data that feeds the model. And data engineering is that core set of discipline that you should at least be aware of, that how you can build the bring the data from different sources and do something with that. And on the top of that, my friend, storytelling and communication. The ability to explain this complex set of insights, understand that, and making it simple and actionable, that is a skill set that pretty much all of us will need, you know. And in those cases, you can use Power BI and Tableau. So those are some of the tools, technologies, and the mindset that I would suggest someone to use if they really want to grow into this field.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Vishal, because I love that way you kind of ended that storytelling and communication. To all who are listening to this episode, please make sure that if you really want to strive in the field of data industry or data world, you have to be a good storyteller, because at the end of the day, you have to communicate your data story to your business stakeholders. Otherwise, there is no point of spending hours and hours churning data and performing those analysis. So please keep that in mind. And also one more thing I would definitely emphasize on what Vishal just says, that try to learn something, you know, one by step at a time. You know, I know it's kind of like hard to being a master of one, since there are so many things going on. So we all kind of like trying to be the jack of all trades. But I just feel like at some point in time, we have to find our expertise. We have to find what we like to do in the AI world and try to stick to that and become a master of or expert of it. So I hope, Vishal, that's something you definitely agree on. And thank you for your perspective on that. So 100%. Just to wrap up, any final thoughts or prediction you would like to share with my listeners about the future of AI and data analytics?
I would say, you know, yes, AI will change a lot of the things for all of us in so many different ways. But I think the soft skills like problem solving, curiosity, creativity, they will still remain the key to succeed, not only in like the core area of technology and AI, but even outside of it, no matter what industry that you work in. I mean, AI tools will do like some of the technical heavy lifting that they are expected to do. But we as humans, we will still need to provide the judgment, the context, the strategy, you know, putting two and two together. And by combining those technical skills with some kind of business sense, I believe like a lot of the data scientists will come to the forefront of the business and they will be able to thrive in this new future based on AI, you know.
Vishal, thank you so much for sharing your incredible insights throughout the episode today. I appreciate your time and thank you for coming here today. To our listeners.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And happy holidays to you and your listeners.
Thank you. To my listeners, this has been another illuminating episode of Data and AI featuring another industry expert. Please don't forget to like, comment, share, and subscribe to my channel, Data Science with Sam, as I'll bring in more episodes featuring more AI, science, and technology experts in the next few months. Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thank you.